Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I am producing here today, Ryan McPherson, sitting alongside the host for your show today, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Ryan. How was your end of year 2015?
It was excellent. Enjoyed some time with the family and really capping off a great year, 2015, and excited about the new year we're in now, 2016.
Did you get a CrossFit workout in to end the year?
Always. I don't miss a workout.
Now, how many have you done so far in 2016?
Zero.
Zero?
Right. No workouts so far in 2016, right. But we'll change that here later today and then later this week, too. What about you? Did you get any spin classes in yourself?
Absolutely.
I knew you
Every
did.
Day.
Good. Good.
Now, who do we got today?
Today, we have two fabulous guests joining us in the studio. First, we have Aubriana Lopez and also Chris Sanders. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Right.
All right. Let's lead off with Aubriana. Aubriana, can you share a little bit about your company and what you're up to?
Sure. So my day job, the one that keeps the lights on at home, is for Digital Element. We're a business unit of Digital Envoy, and we're located here in Atlanta. We've been around since 1999, and I lead up our mobile strategy. So anything that has to do with mobile, hyperlocal, wireless, that kind of falls under me. It's a really exciting space to be in right now, but Digital Element has been the leader in IP geolocation technology. We work with companies like Facebook, Twitter, Pandora, Hulu, across the board for a variety of reasons, but you know, primarily we are able to tie a location to where somebody is coming from to a connected user. So obviously that's very powerful when it comes to your safety for online banking, when it comes to targeted advertising, any type of digital rights management. So we work in a lot of different industries there. And the mobile portion of it, obviously with mobile just growing and growing, you know, it's so important for us to kind of make sure that our products and our clients are able to work with us across any device.
And you're also the president of the Atlanta chapter of the LBMA. Can you share a little bit about that?
I am. The LBMA is the Location-Based Marketing Association. We're a nonprofit, and we're really focused on, you know, the education and collaboration and research, those three things when it comes to location-based marketing. And what we consider location-based marketing is the intersection of people, places, and media. So mobile, obviously, is a large part of that. But, you know, you've got interactive billboards and, you know, connected things, whether it's the Internet of Things. I hate using that word, but that phrase, but you know, we're really very widespread, and it's really interesting to see how different technologies are interacting together. And it's a lot of fun. I love hitting that up.
Now, since this is the first episode of the new year, do you mind sharing a little bit of kind of your vision of 2016? What are some trends you see in digital and mobile?
So, you know, I think that it's always interesting to say what your predictions are for the year, because then you look back at the end of the year and
then we're going to hold you to it.
Yeah.
Make you come back.
Well, let's not do that. You know, it's interesting looking back at, just to kind of look back at 2015 a little bit. A lot of the trends were, you know, everybody was focused on beacon technology, and that was kind of the hot new thing. And,
right.
You know, I think,
how'd that pan out?
You know, I don't think it panned out like a lot of people thought. I would say that it did pan out.
I think they're the
like
QR codes.
Yeah. You know, I think that the things that did work out is that they're able to see in a more passive way how beacon technology could be beneficial. You know, seeing where people hang out, where people pass by. But when it comes to, you know, pushing content and deals when you're in the moment, nobody shops like that. And
like,
and I
Minority
think,
Report, like you,
yeah, when you set out to change the way that consumers behave, I think that doesn't necessarily work for you. But you know, mobile itself has changed the way consumers behave, but that wasn't necessarily its mission when it started, right? So I think that looking back, you know, beacons will still continue to evolve, and we'll interact with them, and you'll see businesses start to use them in a different way. But I wouldn't put that on my top, you know, three things for 2016. What I would put, you know, as the top hot new things that people are talking about are virtual reality, augmented reality, so the AR and VR world. I think that's going to be really huge with the gamers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, expands to people outside the gaming world, but that's a big prediction. I think that's going to grow.
Do you have one of those Google Cardboard contraptions?
I don't, not yet.
Have you played with?
No, any? Have no. You?
Yes.
I'm
wild.
Sure. I'm sure a lot of people will be playing with that starting what, Wednesday at CES. So.
Right. And then the Oculus Rift, the contraption.
Yes.
It's coming out.
Yeah. I mean, with Facebook owning that, who knows what's going to happen, right? I mean, you're going to be merging the worlds of, you know, VR, social, location, everything that Facebook has its hands in. So that could be a dangerous, you know, a dangerous combination. Well,
imagine the movie theater experience if everybody has those glasses on,
mm-hmm.
where everybody's like, if you're a fly on the wall looking yeah. at all that, it's bizarre.
I think it looks bizarre even if you're not in a movie theater. Right. So, but you know, it's cool. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing more of the science behind that and what are the long-term effects on the human mind with things like that. But, you know, that's a big one. And I also think, you know, the continued use of data that we're gathering from the Internet of Things, all these different items in our households, in our cars, you know, interacting with one another, gathering all that data and using that to make, you know, marketing more powerful or more connected and relevant, as well as, you know, just being able to know how people move through things, are making our cities smarter, making, you know, better decisions as it comes to construction and ongoing things that we're always doing to, you know, build up our environment around us and see how that pans out as well. So I think those are my two bigger predictions for 2016.
So the data mining, obviously, just because you can acquire lots of data, it just becomes like overwhelming. It's like a fire hose. You know, you might not be able to drink out of it, but you are... Right. Kind of gathering it. Do you think that there's been initiatives that you've seen, actually practical initiatives, where you can kind of pull out stuff that is relevant, that is actionable, that can kind of drive sales or even drive information so that maybe you nudge people in the right direction so that they're behaving in a way that's more appropriate?
Absolutely. You know, think of retail stores. And right now is a really interesting time in retail because, you know, a lot of people are saying it's kind of the death of brick and mortar right now and more people are moving over to the e-commerce side. But I certainly think that being able to know where a consumer is coming from when they're searching for something, let's say, let's take, you know, a hardware store like Lowe's, for example. You know, if Lowe's knows where I'm coming from, then maybe they can show me the stores that have the inventory for what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And rather me having to go to the store, I know it's in the store. You know, I can't find it, but it says it's here. You know, I think connecting all of those things to make it a more user-friendly and a more consumer, you know, customer service-oriented experience is what we're looking for. And I think that as retailers transition to focus more on that and use the data pieces that matter and be able to do it in real time, that's when they're going to be able to keep consumers in their brick and mortar locations and spending more money and, you know, generate that loyalty that they really want and connecting with them. And I think that the retailers that fail to do that and fail to correctly utilize that data are the ones that are going to kind of die out
right,
over the next 5 years. Yeah.
And I think that to that same point that the retailer kind of might have to expand the way they see themselves and create more of an experience that isn't so transactional and it's more relationship driven.
Absolutely. You know, at one of our location-based marketing association events that we do twice a year is called Retail Loco. And it was a couple of Retail Locos ago, but we had Neiman, Mr. Marcus, who is of the Neiman Marcus family.
Right.
And he said, you know, 90% of what happens to the customer happens in the store and how they relate with your employees. So, you know, only 10%, in his opinion, obviously, but I would say that's a pretty good opinion, you know, is actually what happens before they get to the store or their interaction with your website. So, you know, that 10% is really important because it may be the first 10%. But if you get into a store and you have employees that aren't helpful, that are not right. relatable, and they're not, you know, making that customer journey enjoyable, then, you know, why are you wasting so much of your money on that 10%? Maybe you should be investing in your employees. And I know that sounds kind of cannibalistic considering this is where I work and I love mobile and technology and I think it's awesome. But, you know, maybe using that type of technology to train your employees or to, you know, allow them to have access to the most up-to-date information for their customers is where they should focus some of their spend.
That's right. It may not be in the obvious places and to kind of use the technology in ways that maybe are surprising rather than just so, you know, It seems that a lot of times they use the technology just for a practical purpose, and there could be kind of some softer ways of leveraging the same technology.
I see a little bit of both, honestly. I see there's certainly a lot of growth for more investment in practical ways because I think that there's a lot of, you know, these big corporations that are spending money. They're like, oh, beacons, you know, that's the new hot thing. How are we going to do this? And then, you know, they'll spend millions of dollars on
right, and they got them all
a beta
the
program and they've
right.
got beacons. But, you know, and my question is, well, what are your objectives? What are you trying to do with these beacons? Oh, right. we're not sure. We're just,
I read
you know,
a blog post.
Yeah. I just, you know, they want that shiny new thing and they want to plug in this technology, but there's no objectives or goals for that. So I think from a strategic standpoint, you have to step back and say, okay, what are the things that we really are trying to achieve? If it is a better relationship with your customers, then let's look at something more practical. But if it's a, you know, something that is a better experience or a more memorable experience, then let's figure out how to plug in that shiny new object, but right. in a memorable and a practical way.
Now, can you share a little bit, if somebody is thinking about taking on digital or expanding their digital strategy, how would you onboard them? Like, what's your first conversation you have with a potential client?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to talk about what is their business? Where have they been the past 5 years? What have they been their successes and their failures? And, you know, who is their customer? Who is your average customer? Let's kind of maybe pick the top four types of people.
And you build out kind of personas?
Yeah, build out some personas. Let's talk about who your target market is. Do you want to continue to grow these personas? Are you trying to shift? Are you trying to change your brand? Or do you just want to cultivate the relationship ongoing with them? And then, you know, kind of building out something that looks like, you know, where are these people coming from? What type of data do you have access to? Where can you, you know, get new data? And then how can we implement that data in, you know, real time or near real time to help you make the best decisions and connecting with them. And, you know, I think that you have to take anything into consideration as a, you know, trial period. Maybe it's a 90-day trial period and reflect on that. Because if you're not constantly looking at what your objectives are, because they may change, and we all know right. business objectives are changing day to day, and how those things that you're trying are affecting them, you know, it's not a plug and play type of thing. You know, digital marketing and every business is going to be a little bit different. So there's certain things that are always, you know, recommended: knowing where your customers are coming from, interacting with them, having a good social strategy, you know, trying to keep them connected with you know, your own content, proprietary content and things of that nature. But, you know, it just is going to depend on what your business is and the direction that you want to go. But I think that, you know, just understanding and getting that history first is where you have to start.
So you have to kind of look backwards to move forward?
Yes, for sure.
Now, when you're doing an onboarding of somebody and you're saying, okay, we're going to do a 90-day pilot, these are objectives, and how do you see some mistakes that customers typically make over and over again, like that maybe you have to manage your expectation? They think that this is like a magic wand, that you're going to do something and all of a sudden a ton more traffic or whatever their objective is going to magically appear.
Yeah, you know, I think that... you do have to be realistic with their objectives. And sometimes it's explaining to them maybe how the data works, or, you know, where there are nuances, because there's always going to be, you know, maybe 80% of the data is perfect all the time for them. But then there's this 20% that you have to say, you know, this is going to kind of ebb and flow, and it's not always going to be exactly what you think it is. But, you know, I think you do have to manage their expectations. I think that also just making sure that questioning their objectives isn't necessarily a bad thing, you know? So, a lot of times
challenging their,
yes. I mean, if you really want them to be successful, you know, my data is a small portion of their overall digital strategy, right? But I want them to be successful because I want them to continue to use their data, and I want them to value, you know, my opinion as a strategist, obviously. So, you know, just making sure that, you know, well, why do you want to do that? And what are you trying to achieve by doing that? I think are the biggest questions that I like to ask. And a lot of times, you know, it means, oh, well, I'm not sure. Maybe we need to like wait another month before we plug this in, because we don't really know where it's going to go. You know, I think that they view you as a trustworthy part of their,
like,
you know,
you're a partner,
operation.
You're not a vendor,
yes,
anymore.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. So, you know, there's certainly value to that. But, you know, there's always going to be the customers who just think that they know what they want to do and they're going to do it. And that's fine too.
Right. Now, can you share a story maybe that you did some work with somebody and some data kind of bubbled up that opened their eyes of a client where they didn't see that coming? And then you were able to go, hey, look, what we learned, maybe you should consider this area and focus a little bit on this.
Well, you know, one thing that we're able to see from Digital Elements' perspective is, you know, we'll look at their IP traffic, for example. So a lot of clients, and I'm trying to think of one in particular that I can
Well, you don't have to
discuss,
name names, but just...
Well, you know, we'll have somebody that comes in and says, you know, we only have, we have 80% of our traffic is mobile. And we're like, okay, great. So let's run, you know, let's do an IP test run. Let's, you know, see what, where all of this traffic's coming from, and we'll run it. And we'll say, hey, actually, you know, you may have 80% of your traffic coming from mobile devices, but guess what? You know, 90% of those are connected via Wi-Fi. So there's,
so what does
still,
that tell you? What is that information?
That information tells you that these people who are connecting to you are not on the go. They're not in the car.
They could be at their house.
They could be at their house. They could be in their office. And there's a lot of things you can tell about people based on that location. I can know, if I know that exact device, then I can know, okay, this device is, you know, here at Business Radio X in the afternoon from, or, you know, during the day from 9 to 5, they probably work there. And then I know that they're at this other location, you know, from about 7 p.m. until 7 a.m. the next day, so that maybe they're home. So I can kind of, then I can assign different psychographics and demographics to that, and I can see their behavior. So I can know, you know, maybe where they work, what kind of, you know, a demographic they fall into based on their zip code. So there's so much information that you can learn about somebody. And so back to, you were asking about, you know, customers and assigning profiles, or, you know, creating the target market. You may think that your target market was, you know, the 18 to 25
right,
year old range.
Because
yeah.
It was all mobile.
Yes.
But it wasn't necessarily
and then you find
mobile.
Out. Yes. Right. So you know, we have customers that come back and they're like, wow, we didn't know that a lot of times. Or,
and that could change your whole approach to marketing.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, it would be day and night if you think it's one group and then it's something totally different.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the benefits of working with a firm like yours. You're able to kind of, you see the best practices from all over, and you can kind of serve your client by kind of sharing some of that insight.
This is true. And you know, when we started out, we were just, you know, a data provider. And I think we've grown probably in the last 4 years now to be more of...
And coincidentally, that's how long you've been there.
Yes. We've been, you know, well, I kind of started the mobile side of things. You know, I was really blessed to be able to come in and say, well, actually what happened is, you know, they said, hey, do you know somebody that maybe could come in and help us with mobile strategy? We see, you know, the market growing in this direction. I said, hey, I can do that. I raised my hand for the job. So, you know, it's been a lot of trying to figure out what that job looks like. What are my objectives? And, you know, sometimes it's great being able to write your own script, but at the same time,
it's also the advice you give your clients, right?
Yes. So yeah, I guess I, you know, I'm kind of living what I'm preaching. So it's, you know, we've been able to grow a lot in that direction, but you know, now it's not just data. It's okay, what are the location services, you know, as it crosses, you know, from desktop to mobile devices, and then also, you know, being able to consult and, you know, offering more consulting and strategy services to our clients.
And then how did the LBMA fit into this? You found the group and then you decided, hey, I'm going to be the president. I'm going to kind of open up the Atlanta chapter because this stuff's not going away.
Yeah, you know, I came across the Location-Based Marketing Association on Twitter, and I just was following them. This is prior to Digital Element. I was with another mobile tech startup that is no longer here in the Atlanta area. And, you know, I was like, this is, we know, you know, these people know what they're talking about. You know, there's so many companies that are involved in this association. I want to get more involved. And so I started, you know, corresponding with the founder and the president of all of LBMA. His name's Asif Khan. He's out of Toronto, Canada. So, you know, we started talking and I said, you know, Atlanta's growing in the mobile industry. You know, you've got some great big companies here. We need to have a chapter here. You know, this is really, really a great thing. So, you know, finally, after I think he came down and it was December 2012, and that's when we launched our Atlanta chapter. And so he's like, you know, I need somebody to head it up, and I think you should. And I said, of course, you know, I think that'd be awesome. It obviously crosses, you know, collaborates with exactly what I do on my day-to-day, you know, efforts. And it's just a great way to meet other people in the industry. And, you know, we're always, I think, challenging each other's with new things that are coming up and how they're being implemented and, you know, best practices. So
at first you got into it just because you wanted to learn more and kind of enhance your education about the industry in this niche.
Exactly. And then I said, you know, why don't we have one of these here in Atlanta? Right. So, you know, I think that I've been in Atlanta for about 6 years now, and I've moved so many different places and seen, you know, business and the way that it's conducted in a lot of different cities. And I think that Atlanta has something really special. You know, you see people from all walks of life, all different backgrounds, ethnicities that are, you know, entrepreneurial, they're starting their own business and they're willing to help you, you know, succeed. I think that's very unique about this city.
The level of collaboration is unique, I think.
It is very unique. And so, you know, I think that bringing an association like this where collaboration is one of our cornerstones.
Right. That's one of the
It's a great thing. And, you know, we have companies, member companies like AT&T, Coca-Cola, Home Depot, you know, the who's who of the Atlanta. And then we also have some small startups that get to, you know, have conversations right. with those who's who's and figure out, well, what are you looking for? You know, how can I create this? So just being able to put those brands and agencies and vendors and retailers all together in one room where it's not a sales pitch or, you know, where you feel like you're,
right.
you have a lot of pressure, you know, you're just really talking about what's going on and how can we be the best in our industry.
And how has the group grown over the years you've been working with them?
This year, and that's grown about 10 chapters in the last year, which is wow. awesome. So internationally too, you know, we've got Australia, I think we've got Singapore, you know, just all
what
over.
What about the group here in Atlanta, membership-wise?
Membership-wise, I think we've grown, you know, I don't know, we don't really classify it as individual members. So if your company
it's
is a member,
member,
if a company is a member, they're a member for all of our chapters. So if they have multiple
wow.
locations, they can go to wherever the chapters
that's
is.
Great.
That's a great benefit. So we've grown, I think, over maybe, I know we're over 1,000 or maybe even close to 2,000 member
wow.
companies now. And we started off with about probably 700. So I think we've grown about 500 this last year. And that's not just, you know, individual members, these are companies.
Right.
So we're talking about thousands of members. So it's been a really big year for growth. And then we also have our podcast, which is about 80,000 views every week, which is awesome.
And that's something that's done out of Toronto with the founders?
So it's two people that do that. And Asif is one of the people, and he is in Toronto. And sometimes he's broadcasting from wherever he's
right.
traveling because he's always on the road. And then Rob Woodbridge, who is the founder of Untether.tv. So he has a lot of different podcasts that he puts out. So he has the Mobile Minute, and then he has, you know, the This Week in Location-Based Marketing. And that's the one that's ours, is This Week in Location-Based Marketing. So that one has about 80,000
wow.
views every week, which is awesome. So, you know, we're growing and we're reaching people all over the world. So we're really happy about that.
Now, do you have meetings here? Atlanta?
We do.
Is it a monthly, quarterly?
We try to do quarterly. And last year was a little bit slower than we would have liked. But that was probably due to, you know, me being on maternity leave and taking on some new roles.
Life gets in the way sometimes.
It does. But we are really excited about 2016. We're going to have a lot more focus on collaboration efforts between mm-hmm. member companies. And so we'll be able to take, you know, companies that are interested in trying new trends and new things. And they want to say, hey, you know, we're interested in, you know, getting into the AR, VR world, and we'll say, oh, we have a member company that does that.
Right.
We should do a case study. You know, let's talk about what you guys figure out. And, you know, you've got two companies with skin in the game and they're really
let's
excited
see what
about,
they can do, right?
Yeah, let's discover, you know, what, let's push the limits a little bit. So I think we're going to really focus on that. And, you know,
so when's the first meeting? Have you decided?
We have not scheduled it yet. We have a lot of companies interested in hosting. So we're hoping to do something. You know, the beginning of the year is kind of crazy for tech people because you've got CES
right.
about to start. And then the next big thing is Mobile World Congress, which is in Barcelona. And that's
right.
at the end of February. And then right after that, you've got South by Southwest. You know, the digital interactive scene's real big out there and it's continuing to grow. So it's hard to schedule something when everybody's in town and, you know, there's nothing else going on. So we're trying to identify what that good date is for, you know, a member company to host that. And we're excited. You know, we've identified some really exciting topics to talk about this year. So, you know, talking about what's actionable about location-based data, you know, how can that actually be used? How do you know that's trusted? You know, and then different things about actually tracking people. What are the privacy implications of that?
Right.
And, you know, so many different topics. So I think it's going to be really exciting.
So now if somebody wants to learn more about LBMA and want to get involved, is there a website or?
There is. It is thelbma.com. And you can sign up for our newsletters there. You can view our podcast there. And
then I'm sure they can find you from there if they're Atlanta-based, right?
They can. My email's on there as well.
Now, what about Digital Element? Is there a way to reach you there if they want to have a more substantive conversation?
Absolutely. Our website is digitalelement.com if you're interested in location data in real time for your website or your business. You can feel free to reach out to us there and the right person will get in touch with you.
And then what's the profile of your perfect client?
Oh, well, I would say that, you know, we kind of have a few major use cases, like I said. So targeting is one. You know, you've got the ability to target in real time and that's for advertising. So, you know, if you're a Facebook or an ad server, an ad network, anybody who wants to target and show, you know, localized ads to somebody, that's kind of one client. And then you've got just localization on a retail side. So if you want to tie your inventory or show your store locations in real time.
So if you're a retailer, you're that's a prime for you, right?
It is. I mean, you know, the last thing you want to have people do is go to your website and have to put in their address to find the nearest location. So if as soon as they hit their website, they can see the nearest store to them.
Boom.
It's right. Awesome. And then you've got obviously the protection side. So any online banking, you know, fraudulent transactions.
Fintech.
Yes, right. We can help you out there. And then, you know, just analyzation. So any analytics that you may have, you want to know, looking back historically, where your clients have been coming from, and, you know, and being able to measure those results, that would be a client for us.
And
the
website for Digital Element again?
DigitalElement.com.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you, Lee.
All right. Next up, we got Chris Sanders. Chris.
Good morning.
You learned something there?
I did.
She's pretty smart, huh?
Fascinating. Yes. Fascinating.
Why don't you share a little bit about what you're up to with Consulting Talent Source?
Right. Thank you, Lee. Thanks for having me here to talk about Consulting Talent Source. I've co-founded this company with a business partner who's in Dallas. And what we're doing with Consulting Talent Source is we're really trying to change the way the world works. And we're doing that by focusing.
Aim low, right?
Just aim low, yes.
The way the world works.
Well, you know, purpose is really big these days, right? Everyone's talking about purpose. What is your purpose? And so many times people jump right into the details and minutiae about what they do day to day. So we always like to start with our purpose, which is pretty bold.
Uh-huh.
But we think it's achievable. But how we plan to change the way the world works, right now at least, is by focusing on this new and growing segment of the workforce called the independent consultant. Independent consultants, as you know, have been around for decades. They've been very prevalent in domains like IT and technology.
Sure.
Right? You know, I need a Java programmer here on Monday. Chances are he or she will be an independent consultant. But what's really changing is the supply of independent consultants and who's actually starting to choose to work this way.
Because there was can you give us maybe some history of the consulting world? Because you have a background in that, right?
Right. Yes, I am a career management consultant. I started off life in the late 90s after undergrad with a company called Anderson Consulting. It became Accenture, then left for graduate school, came back and joined Ernst & Young, another household name. And during that time, I've seen the consulting industry evolve quite a bit.
Right. And can you share, like, how does it go? Like, you were in college, obviously, you were in a good college. They recruited you. You could have maybe chosen between several consulting firms, right?
Right.
So you made a decision which one to go to. And the typical life of a college graduate that goes out into one of these firms is, it's kind of a rough road, right? Like, they send you out and you might be traveling 4 or 5 days a week,
yes,
and then come back home for the weekends and back and forth for years, right?
Yes. It's a very high intensity environment. I enjoyed my earlier years. I learned quite a bit. But yes, travel is pretty aggressive. Traveling 4 to 5 days a week.
That's not unusual.
It's not unusual. Typically, your work weeks are somewhere around 60 hours. Mm-hmm. Work week. In my case, I had an opportunity to work locally here in Atlanta quite a bit, but I also lived in Sweden and Ireland just by the nature of, I was in broadband in my earlier days, deploying broadband for big companies and designing sales
processes.
So it was
good for your frequent flyer miles.
It was.
Your hotel points, right?
Yes. Bad for personal side of your life, but professionally was able to learn quite a bit about the industry and about what it takes to work with a client.
So you're not coming at this from an outsider view. You were an insider. You've kind of lived this in lots of different ways, and your partner as well, right?
This is true. Both me and my partner are career consultants. We've both been at
top. So you're trying to kind of change this model a little bit.
That's right. What we're doing is, so if you look at, if you back up just a little bit to set the stage for the working world, if you think about it, the primary mechanism for harnessing human talent in the last 50 years has been the employee model,
right?
If you think about it. So before we even get to consulting, just think about the employee model, right? Post-World War II, how do you get things done? How do you mobilize people?
Right.
It's been the employee model.
And it's been, companies had to have thousands of them.
Thousands of employees,
right?
That's right. And in fact, in the post-World War II era, large pools of exclusive employee-based was actually a competitive advantage for a company, right? But what's happened in the last it started a few decades ago, but has really started to speed up, is the pace of change in the world we live in. I think everyone in this room would agree that we're living in a time where the pace of change has sped up significantly.
Yes.
And in this new era of continuous change and volatility, the employee model can actually be a barrier to help to a
you
company
can't be nimble
agile.
Enough,
that's
right?
Right. Agile. That's right. So we're saying the employee model is not going away, but what's happening is organizations that are becoming more agile in this new environment are starting to balance the use of internal employees with the use of external talent, mm-hmm. right? Consulting firms, outsource placement firms, and independent consultants, which is the growing segment in that external right. External piece. So that's really the context in which we're operating in, right? This the need for greater agility, and the new world of the open workforce, where organizations are using employees and external talent.
And that's because they need kind of this specialized talent, but just for a project maybe, or for a short period of time to come in and out, solve a problem and be done. But they also still have to have some strategic kind of view of the world too, because they don't want to just, you know, use Band-Aids to solve problems.
Exactly.
So that's really a difficult position for a lot of companies.
It's a very difficult position, and it's one in which the external workforce and independent consultants can really help address. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look at the employee model and you look at traditional consulting, where I grew up and other firms, have typically been isolated from many of the workforce trends, because they've typically been the folks you call
right,
to help.
Right, to fix the problem.
But here's what's changing and what's created an opening for this new concept. In this world of increasing pace of change, traditional consulting firms are no longer immune from some of the same challenges in talent in the employee model that non-consulting organizations face.
So what do you mean by that?
If you look at a big consulting firm and look at a consulting firm like the ones that I worked with, like right. 200,000 people around the world, what you'll find in any given time is they don't always have the expertise that a client needs on demand. It could be that those resources are deployed elsewhere on other projects.
Right.
It could be a specialized skill that the company just can't afford to invest an entire practice in, but does certainly needs to be able to service a client.
So the outsourcers have to outsource.
Exactly. So what we're finding is this layer of talent called the independent consultants. These are people who in our business model are people with 10, 15, 20 years of experience.
So this isn't the college kid.
This is not the college kid.
This is the person who's kind of been there and done that.
Been there, done that, and has a number of options.
Maybe even wrote the book about it.
Has a number of options on how they would like to work, and have selected and chosen to work as an independent, as a right. micropreneur, and be self-employed. The interesting thing about this talent pool is it can underpin all of the other organizational types, whether you're an organization like Coca-Cola who needs to use external talent, you might make use of an independent consultant. But even if you're an Accenture of the world or a McKinsey of the world, you also...
Right, you might need a specialized skill
right.
that you don't have on your roster.
Exactly. So you're seeing a shift in even the traditional consultants, consulting firms starting to embrace this talent agility, open workforce, balancing employee base with external talent to remain competitive.
So now, when you and your co-founder decided to start Consulting Talent Source, you had to solve two problems, right? You needed to get work for the consultants, and then you had to get consultants for the work.
That's right. That's right. So
how'd you attack that?
Well, we, just like any startup, we're all wearing multiple hats here and continuing to grow, but we do have that sort of bifurcated focus, certainly. On the one hand, we're building what we call a curated network of talent. Mm-hmm. So we're constantly looking for independent consulting professionals that have strong pedigrees and great differentiated expertise to join our network.
Right.
And we have a whole series.
So you have an outreach program just for that to attract them and to woo them, right?
We do. We use LinkedIn quite a bit, like everyone does these days.
Sure.
We publish papers and we use our informal networks as well.
Right.
It's amazing. Operating in the level that we operate, which is the senior level people with the differentiated skills, our initial network build has been largely due to our own personal networks and people who are coming to us as referrals.
Mm-hmm.
So we're building the network constantly. And on the flip side, as you mentioned, on the other side, we're working to generate demand. And that involves, one of the interesting helpful aspects of my own experience is I've been an independent consultant for going on 4 years now.
Right.
So I've built up a client base. I've built up a bit of a personal brand.
Like for yourself.
That's right.
So, but now you got to kind of broaden that.
Broaden that and go beyond it. That's exactly right. So it's a delicate balance, but it's my personal goal, and I know my partner shares this vision, is to really make a difference in the world and achieve our purpose. We will have to move past our individual work, right? And bring scale to what we do, which is what this company is really all about.
So now how do you go about attacking it that way? Because that is a bit of a paradigm shift for yourself.
Yeah, it's, you have to buy into the vision first and foremost, right? I mean, that starts there, right? If you go through a year and all you've done is just worked yourself on a few projects, you will have a little bit of money in the bank in your pocket, but you won't have gotten anywhere near closer to your goal. So it's a balance. You've got to, what we do is force ourselves to introduce the company constantly and continuously to people in our network and other forums like this to get the word out on these new options that are available to organizations. And you just have to manage both.
Are the companies open to this?
Companies are open to this. What we're finding is there are a few different flavors. First of all, this option is attractive to a wide variety of organization types, from small sort of startup organizations to large established organizations.
Enterprise, right.
But they think of this option in different ways and it's valuable to them in different ways.
So you got to kind of educate them slightly differently.
Yes. So in the case, where the organization sort of knows about this option, knows about this talent pool, maybe then they themselves were consultants before in a previous life and they understand this growing independent consulting base, it's a much easier value prop for them. They're just happy to find a new source. Instead of going through Rolodexes and asking someone.
And hoping a friend of a friend is going to solve this.
They can push a button and then get the right person there. Yeah, exactly. For those who are new to this concept, it is a bit of an educational process to help them understand some of the underlying trends and really understand that there is a new and growing talent pool that they can avail themselves of. And so what we find in those situations is that, the light bulb moment with the client when they understand, wow, I didn't know this existed.
Right.
I thought I'd have to.
But those are the good, the conversations you want to have more of.
Exactly.
So, have you figured out how to scale that conversation of how to have more of those in a more replicatable manner?
Right. I think we're starting with a good initial set of clients. And what we're trying to focus on there is just
serve the heck out of them.
Serve the heck out of them.
And then just kind of grow within those organizations.
And you see sometimes the best new business lead comes from one of your great clients, a chief marketing officer or a chief financial officer, referring you to another organization.
Right.
Because these individuals at this level, lots of them are very well networked. So
now, for the companies out there, who is the person you want to talk to with that? Is it the C-level person, the CMO, CFO, CIO?
Yes. We typically are dealing with more senior level leaders in an organization who have pretty broad responsibilities and mm-hmm. budget, quite frankly, who can make buying decisions, who may buy external consulting talent from any number of different players, and they typically have a player in mind for specific needs. But we tend to deal at that level, which does differentiate us a little bit from some of the other players in the market who tend to deal with anyone with a budget. We typically deal with more strategic senior leaders and organizations.
So now, is your organization have people all over the country or all over the world? Where are you at right now?
We do. Our network is growing every week. We are, as long as you have the right experience and expertise, and we invite you to the network, we're less concerned with where you physically live. So we've got part of our network in New York. We have network here in Atlanta. We have part of our network in Dallas, obviously, places where we're physically spending more time.
Sure.
But you can really be anywhere. We've got a handful of people in Kansas City, for example, that have come to us through various channels. So it's almost less important where you live if you're willing to travel, for one. But a lot of the work could be done remotely as well in some cases.
Now, is that one of the benefits? Because there are some consulting practices that, you know, want to place the consultant near the work.
Yeah, it is. I think as our network grows, that will become an additional differentiator for us. But what we've found is the kind of work we do, the client is less interested in having necessarily a... You know,
want to solve the problem.
Who's
right?
The right person in this city? They want the right person,
period,
right, with the right skill sets.
Exactly.
And so that might be a local project. It might not be a local project. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time in New York, for example.
Right.
I just do. It just happens to be where many of my clients are. But that's what we're finding. So location and local is a secondary criteria.
So now if you're an independent consultant and you want to get involved with your group, what's the best way for someone to reach out to you?
Really go to our website. It's consultingtalentsource.com. We have lots of information there. There is a process to apply to our network.
Right.
It's free of charge.
So it's free to be part of the network?
It's free and it's non-exclusive. You may belong to additional networks as well as ours.
That's a lot of confidence you have.
Lee, it's where the world is going.
Right.
The boundaries everywhere and borders are falling. So what we're doing is just embracing it.
Right, rather than fighting it.
That's right, exactly. We'll differentiate on our client relationships and the experience that a client and a consultant has by using our platform. We call it a platform.
Now, if you're a company that you need consultants, you go to the same website?
You can go to the same website. It's a little bit of, there's a section. If you've got talent, you click here. if you need talent,
you click somewhere else.
But and my contact information is online as well. You can reach us by email. You can call our phones and we'll deal directly with you. And that is a differentiator of our model. It is a higher touch. You'll find some online platforms have emerged in this space. And I think the ecosystem will support a number of players. But the people who are typically our clients they want to pick up a phone and call someone and talk to someone.
It's a higher touch relationship.
That's right.
Driven kind of experience with you guys.
Exactly.
Now, what's the pain a typical company is having that where you're a good fit?
We are, in many ways, mirroring and modeling the capabilities of other talent providers, particularly consulting firms.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way that clients think of us, as an alternative to or an addition complement to the traditional consulting firms. Because if you think about it, most of the people in our network are career consultants, right?
And so, probably have a kind of history with the larger firms.
Exactly. So if I was to recount just a sample of the most recent opportunities that have come across our desk, it was an opportunity, a case we worked on a couple of weeks ago where the CEO of a media company just acquired another company and needed a very strong and seasoned consultant to help with the post-acquisition integration.
Right.
And this person would spend time in two cities traveling here in Europe for about a three-month time frame, right? So obviously that consultant is going to have to be versed in mergers and integration, right?
Right.
Another example has been a media company. Another media company had a new product set and wanted to scale that product set up to their operations. During the pilots, if you look at the back office operations, it was all manual processes, right? Just to prove the case for this new product set. Well, now they want to scale the product.
Right. So now that's a different
Kind of skill set, right? Right. What is that going to take, right, to scale this product? So we had a practitioner who came in and helped that organization identify all of the barriers to scale from a process and an organizational and a technology perspective, quantify all of that into a business case, develop recommendations and a roadmap to help that organization scale that new product setup. So just a couple of flavors. This takes very, you know, senior level differentiated skill sets.
Right.
And the ability to work autonomously, meaning that you don't have a big firm behind you.
Right.
Right.
With the overhead of that big firm.
With the overhead of that big firm, right, which is a savings to everyone. But you've also got to be able to work with a pretty senior level of client and work with their teams to structure and deliver work.
So you delivered a ton of value in that case.
We did. I think we did. And the client is going to move forward with the next phase, and we'll be well positioned to help them with that. So those are the kinds of projects that we are
involved. It's not a one and done thing. You know, they can go back to you and find another specialist in another area.
That's right.
If the need.
They can come back to us to find another specialist to fit a different need. They can also come to us with a team request, right? So we have a service where we can actually help a client scope out a broader project to solve an issue, and we can put multiple people into a team, right? And then they deal with our company and those individuals to solve a bigger problem. So we have that service.
Well, exciting time for you. Exciting times.
It is. And my own prediction for 2016 in this space, you'll see a lot more and an increased use of these sort of top-tier independent management consultant.
And again, if somebody wanted to learn more, if you got talent, you can go there. If you need talent, you can go there as well. The website again?
ConsultingTalentSource.com.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you very much, Lee.
How'd they do?
Lee, I think that was fantastic. And you did a great job as always as well.
Thanks, Ryan.
My pleasure. I think it's our best show of the year so far, and we're looking forward to a lot more great shows here in 2016. So if your company is out there doing something interesting to generally serve your market and your community, reach out to us directly on the contact page at businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor, and on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan McPherson. Until we talk again on the radio.